Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 66 of Push to Plat. How are you this week? What have you been up to as we re-emerge out into the world? I'm looking out at the moment from my, well, I suppose I'd call it a study. You know, that's very eccentric, isn't it? A study. It's got some lovely glass windows, and it's actually raining and dark here. It is the perfect afternoon for some gaming. So I look forward to that later on. But more than that, I look forward to speaking to our next guest, a returning guest, a wonderful trophy huntress. In fact, I noticed she's acquired quite a few platinums since we last spoke, so I'm looking forward to getting into that. But she's more than a trophy huntress. She is a JRPG enthusiast. She is the maker, the designer, if you like, the brains behind many wonderful contests on PSN profiles, also on our also the author, I suppose, of our own event that we've got coming up here in the Push to Plat community as well. It is my great pleasure today to welcome Eigen Space to the podcast. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. Looking forward to going in depth about various things.
Well, let's not go too in depth because, as you know, Eigen, I prefer the first 5 minutes of most things. So, you know, like we'll surface treatment a few things, but by all means, if you want to add substance to this occasion, you can. I look forward to that. So I do want to ask, because last time you came on, it was some time ago. You're actually less than 100 plats. Now, you know, considering the games you sort of play, I see you're up to 117. So you have been pretty busy, haven't you, in the last year or so?
Yeah, I think it's been probably about 10 months since I was last on your show. And I think I had around 80, 90 platinums at that point. And yeah, I'm definitely well over the 100 mark at this point. With number 100 being Tales of Graces, the European stack. I've already gotten the North American stack, but yeah, just playing all sorts of things. A lot of recommendations from you, actually.
That is always risky. I like it. I like it a lot. Now, it's fair to say the last time you came on, you were a completionist. It looks like at 96.58% that you are still a completionist. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think since I've last been on, I've went back and completed a couple games that were unfinished, one of which was one Mindy kind of roasted me on last time I was on. It was Atelier Shally. Mindy noticed that I had completed, you know, all of the other Atelier games, but I had this one Atelier game at 19%. And it's just because I'm not quite a fan of that particular game. But I went ahead and completed that, and since the last time, I think there's only one game that I started and didn't complete, which was Record of Agarest War, which is just a super grindy strategy JRPG from the PS3 era.
I remember that. So listeners, if you are interested, we actually did a wonderful deep dive, I suppose, if you like, of the Atelier series and sort of where to start, what to play and how it all works. Because it's a massive series, Eigen. And, you know, at the time I had these wonderful thoughts of actually playing some, but, you know, it just didn't happen, which I'm sure doesn't surprise you. In the slightest, but they're there, and I'm looking forward to them. So I thought what we would do today, listeners, is we're gonna talk some events first off, and then we'll jump into what we've been playing, and then we're gonna do a similar thing. We're gonna have a look at the Tales of games, or the Tales games in general. So it's a massive property here. I didn't realize, like, and it began in 1995 with the Tales of Phantasia. I'm gonna say for the Super Famicom. Isn't that fantastic? It's spawned 16 main titles, multiple spin-off games, animes, manga, and audio dramas. But of course, we're interested here predominantly in the ones on PlayStation. And we were laughing before we started, where we were talking about the length of these games comparable to Dragon's Quest in its structure as well. So I'm looking forward to getting into this series, which has also interests me. I didn't know this because I didn't think it's so big in the West, but it is sort of rated as the third biggest RPG series in Japan behind Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest. So it has a big following, Eigen.
Yes, I'm not surprised to hear that. I would say probably in the US, the Tales is probably even ahead of Dragon Quest as the top JRPG series. I don't think Dragon Quest has had as many ports out here.
Yes, I think it's much slower. And I think I pulled some numbers as of May of 2019, over 20 million games sold worldwide. So nothing to be sneezed at all. But look, let's turn our hands first to events. You know, now I know you love crafting these events. I know you love running them. It's great to see you're back again. Why don't we start, before we get into the main one that you're doing at the moment, why don't we start with the Gaming by Numbers? That's up and running again. How is it going so far?
Sure. So Gaming by Numbers, for those listeners that don't know what it is or aren't on PSN profiles, it's an event that I've been running for the past 3 years. Basically, every game has its own URL. And with the URL, there is a number associated in that URL. So the Gaming by Numbers part comes into play with that number. So basically, you have to complete a game that has the last digit of the URL number matching up through digits 0 through 9. And you eventually get this little event badge that gets colored in like a color by numbers page, depending on which numbers you complete. So that's the event gist. And it's been going really well so far. Lots of participants. I think it's up to around 90 participants at this point, which is comparable to the past 2 years. And quite a number of games have actually been completed for it at this point, even though it's only been going on for the past 10 days.
I think it's fair to say that it's probably one of the most popular events on the site there that you referenced. So it's wonderful to see that it is well supported. Now, I'm just checking. It may have already closed off. Are the entries still open or is it now closed for this year?
You still have 5 more days to enter as of this podcast recording. So it's until July 15th. Is when the cutoff date is for signing up.
Yeah, perfect. So there you go, listeners. Unfortunately, I think you'll have probably missed the cutoff, but you know, jump in and have a look because it's not the only event that Eigen runs throughout the year, but it's, as we said, it is one of the biggest. Now, I wanted to talk to you about this event because I love going to the thread and seeing people that have planned out what game they're going to play for each number. It shows a level of self-control that I don't know in my trophy hunting circle of friends, Eigen, although perhaps they're more in your circle. But that's not a requirement, is it? You don't actually have to nominate which game for which number.
That's correct. You don't have to say beforehand which games you're going to complete for each number. But I do know that a lot of people like to plan it out so they can make sure they have games for each number. And if not, they can go buy something that's on sale. It also helps other people to kind of get an idea of which games match up with which numbers by looking at other people's lists. And, you know, as you mentioned, you don't have to complete the numbers in any particular order, but some people do go a little crazy and they want to complete it in numerical order, so they'll do game 0 first, and then 1, and then 2, all the way to 9. We've had some people do some interesting things, like they found 10 different Lego games that had all different numbers, so they just did their entire list based on Lego games. So we get some interesting things in there every once in a while.
That would appeal to a few listeners of this show. Now, I must ask, we're 10 days in. Have you made a start on this list yourself? Have you knocked over a few numbers already?
I have gotten 5 numbers completed so far. One right before we started recording this. And 5 is actually the number of games that you need to at least earn the badge. But of course, you won't have all the different areas colored in with only 5 games. You have to have all 10 for a full colorful badge. But yeah, I have 5 games. And I think you have 8, CJ.
Well, you know, look, that's fantastic, 5 there. But why I love this event so much, Eigen, is it's one of the few events that I can finish with no effort required beyond what I normally play, I think, because I'm very privileged to have East Asia Soft and Rattalaika, I know you're a big fan, Paugi as well. They like to vary the numbers of the URL list. So I will probably hit 10 without even realizing. I didn't even know I was up to 8, but that's wonderful. There's probably only 3 different games in that 8 as well, which makes it even more special. But But, you know, look, probably not the point of the event. But, you know, these things happen. Now, what I really want to talk to you about, though, is this Platt Race of the Maidens 2020. So this is an event, I believe, that you sort of kicked back into life, an event that was established by some female gamers beforehand. A Mesopithecus, I think, won. I'm gonna throw to you for the other two. I just can't remember off the top of my head. But could you tell me why you did this and just a little bit about it, I suppose?
Sure. So this Platt Race of the Maidens was actually conceived by Shayna Altair, and the original participants were herself, Mesopithecus, and Edenstar 84. And this was back in 2018, I believe, when they first ran this. And basically what it is it's female gamers playing games that are female led. So the main characters in the games are female. Now you can play games that don't have female leads. You just don't get as many points for them. So playing female led games gets you extra point bonuses, and it's all based on points, and it's a lot of fun so far. Some people are taking it pretty seriously. Other people are a little slow to get started, but I'm sure everyone's gonna get right up in there and finish some games for it.
Yeah, yeah. If we could just talk about this for a little bit, because just before you got this going or something, I think you reached out to me and said, do I know any female gamers? And I was like, well, you know, or have there been many on the show? And I was thinking back to it and dreadful reflection on myself, but there really hasn't been a lot, you know, and ever since you actually sent that message, I've been more proactive in searching, because obviously there are many female gamers out there, but is it a special sort of a thing that you're doing here for yourself as well by just creating an event for females? Do you see it like that? I know there are, we have quite a few female listeners, but I sometimes wonder if they feel oppressed, isn't that a dreadful word, by some of their male trophy hunter counterparts, some who are very aggressive as well.
You know, it's not so much that I think, male trophy hunters are aggressive or females don't get involved in trophy hunting competitions that often. I just, I think maybe it can be a little off-putting sometimes for females, a little hard to get in there and set down their flag. I actually had to message a lot of the participants personally to ask them if they wanted to join. And after that, they said, yeah, sure. There were only maybe two participants who joined without me asking them first. So I think maybe it's just a little bit of hesitancy to go out and actually, you know, grab the bull by the horns and join it themselves. But some of the people who I asked personally, they're doing a really good job with their points right now. They would definitely be able to hold a candle to some of the top trophy hunters in events like the Trophy Hunter League on PlayStation profiles. In fact, one of the participants in the Maidens event just won the Trophy Hunters League on the most recent series of it, Andrea 9281.
That's correct. I mean she's one of the most competitive trophy hunters out there, and I by no means am belittling female trophy hunters. I mean currently there are two that I know confirmed trophy hunters in the top 10 in the world as well, so they're definitely out and about and doing their thing, which is great. Now what I want to ask you, what I found interesting, was you have a long list of games there with female leads. Now, I was actually quite surprised, I suppose, that there were so many games. Have you discovered new games you didn't know about already from doing this with female leads?
So I'm pretty much playing games as I typically would. Any game you play gets you points, whether or not it has a female lead. You just get extra points if it does have a female lead. But now that I'm playing this event, when there is a female lead, I go, oh, look, there's one. And I'm actually surprised when listing out my games or tallying up the points that I play so many games with female leads. I didn't think I played that many, but probably the past 10 to 12 games that I've played, only one or two of them have had males as the lead characters. And, you know, as I said, I'm not playing games any differently than I normally would, but just so happens that I tend to gravitate toward games with female leads, I suppose.
It's a funny thing because I've been doing some listening and some work with some podcasts on different, you know, beyond just general gaming and things and into safe spaces and things like this as well. And one of the things we're talking about and sharing is like the characters we choose to play when there are both options. And for a long time, I've always just chosen the female character. I don't know for any particular reason. And I know that, you know, in Assassin's Creed or Odyssey recently, everyone chose the female character or whatever. But I mean, even in things like the first person or third person shooters, The Division 2 as well, I always choose a female character there. And I don't know why it is. And we were sort of getting into this, you know, because it is role playing ultimately in games. And I know this is deviating a little bit from what you were saying here, but it's something we were talking about recently in the chat in Discord. And I'm interested to follow up on this with you. And we're talking about representation and female representation in games. And then we got on to an interesting topic, a topic that always deserves some light. And it was sort of fluid sexuality or whatever else in representation as well. So without touching that so much, do you think there is enough female representation in games?
I mean, I tend to play a lot of JRPGs and Japanese games. And I think in those games, there's always tons of just strong female characters. You know, they might not necessarily be the lead character, but in almost every game that I've played, that's a JRPG, apart from Final Fantasy 15, which was just a sausage fest. There's always been at least several characters in the party who are female and just excellent. And they're not always just, you know, the stereotypical healer role. There's like lots of strong warrior women and black magic users and all just sort of awesome female characters. So yeah, I think in the games that I play, at least, they're represented very well.
Yeah. And look, I would, you know, I'm treading the line here carefully because I don't want to be called bigoted, obviously. But look, I would agree as well. I haven't noticed it. But again, I play a good number of Japanese games, and definitely in the visual novels, obviously, there are many females, sometimes fan service, but often very strong characters as well. Because you opened the door on stereotypes, and because I like to go off on tangents, we've already talked about Dragon's Quest. Now, there is a fantastic character in Dragon's Quest 11 here, Silvando, who is very typical, very stereotypically, overtly gay, I think. Although I don't know that it's ever dressed in the game, but he is very effeminate. He's very much pushing that image, which is interesting. When you talk about stereotypical in this light, this is what I find interesting about female characters, like we've seen recently with Ellie and The Last of Us 2, although, you know, gay as well, although that isn't really the issue here. Very strong character within her own right. I don't find that the characters are pushed to such extremes, I suppose, as I see in JRPGs. I know you've played Dragon's Quest 11. What do you think about a character like him in that game?
Well, Silvando, I think, was actually my favorite character. I really enjoyed his flamboyance and happiness, and he was often comic relief in the game. I just really liked him as a character, especially the parade part. That was my favorite part in the game.
I didn't know what to expect when that came up, and it was fantastic, wasn't it? I mean, it's straight out of Mardi Gras. But I mean, there are a lot of, I find that very interesting because, you know, you made an interesting comment about how many of the population is really, you know, LGBTQI leaning or whatever else, or questioning. And you know, you sort of, you know, said like 96% is straight. Now, I looked up that, and in America, that probably is true. I mean, in the rest of the world, that's probably true. I was always taught, you know, that it was about 10%. Although, look, trust me, you know, in the 80s, finding that 10% was thin on the ground, I can tell you, Eigen. But, you know, they were there, apparently. And then, you know, so it is a small percentage. And then I see a character like that is so outwardly flamboyant. I mean, one of his special moves is pulling a love heart out of the ground and shooting it at other characters, which also ironically is a similar move or an over-sexualized move perhaps that the Jade character pulls as well. I mean, that Mardi Gras float, he even converts his father, you know, the typical straight-laced warrior as well. And I just wonder sometimes if these games maybe just push the stereotype a little too far.
I guess I'm not particularly sensitive to it. I thought that Silvando was just over the top and flamboyant, but I didn't think that the stereotype was being pushed too far. Mm. I just think that a stereotype was being used. But then again, I'm not necessarily, don't have my claws dug into that world so much, so to speak.
Excellent. So let me steer you towards safer water here, more neutrality, if you like. So what I think my point overall being is that I like in a lot of the games I'm playing now, whether it be The Last of Us 2, whether it be the female characters in Dragon Quest XI, whether it be even Asuna in the new Sword Art Online game that's just come out, although in all the others as well, they are very strong characters without being over the top. And I think that is very exciting. So I think that you know, your event is digging up these games as well is wonderful. Now, one of the things I saw in the rules, and I know we're getting bogged down here, listeners, but you know, it's interesting to me, Eigen, is this rule, and I just wanted to ask you about it. It makes a lot of sense, but I wanted to ask, you know, why it's included here. New games must be out 2 months before a rarity percentage and a time multiplier can be established. Now, I think this is the predominant fault of many competitions, including the current THL format, in that you can, in effect, buy a game, you can play it that day or whatever else, and it can be an obscure game, and you'll get a time that counts. So do you find this rule works? Do you think perhaps this is almost an essential rule to combat dirty, disgusting spam hunters like myself?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's to combat spam hunters, but one of the stipulations of the point accumulation is that you get multipliers for the length of the game, which is based on the 25th percentile completion time. And so if you have a game, let's say Persona 5, which is a 100 plus hour game, it can take some people up to a month and a half of real world time to actually complete this. If you don't take it out those 2 months, then you're not going to have an accurate look at what the true 25th percentile completion time is. You're just going to have the fastest of the fast people. And so your times are going to be skewed. Also with the rarity, if you're one of the people who can get games done really, really quickly, on the first day, let's say, and you know, hundreds of other people have bought this game and you're the first one to get it, then well, now you're 1% completion, but it just might take the other people a couple days to complete it, and lo and behold, it ends up being a 50% rare game. You just didn't give the other people enough time to complete it. So I think that just having it out for 2 months allows enough data to be accumulated to give an accurate reflection of what these rarity and completion times truly look like, rather than just basing it on some very small number of initial completers.
Look, I totally agree with you. And let's hope the THL never discovers this rule, because that would be the end of me completely. I can assure you, it would be a devastating loss to my tournament career, I suppose, which is so on track at the moment, I suppose. Look, I like all that. Now, as you can tell, listeners, Eigen is wonderful at maths, wonderful at statistics and things. And while you were talking there, there was a lot that I didn't understand, but I'm a small brain man, so it's not surprising. But one of the great things about doing your events is all the numbers involved, is all the spreadsheets and things. So as we said, listeners, if you're not familiar, jump on to PSN Profiles and check them out, because I know that you love stats. You know, and that could almost be a side business for you if you ever had time, Eigen, to create some sort of a statistical profile thing, a script that could, you know, just pull out random numbers from people's profiles. They would love it. and probably pay you a fortune for it.
I think PSN Profiles has a pretty nice set of stats already. And my programming might not be up to snuff to get anything more sophisticated.
Look, I understand, but there's always room for you know new stats. Like, I've always been interested in this, you know, the views per profile against the country rank and the bronze trophy. I think I had a name for it at one point, but you know, it would be a fascinating stat, or at least for me. But look, let's leave that there. Why don't we go across then to some of the games that you have been playing, and what would you like to share with our listeners?
Sure. Well, first off, do you see anything on my profile that you want more information on?
Well, look, of course, I can lead if you like, because you have a wonderful profile. It's a mixed bag of stuff that I really like. So I just want to ask you a game from a few weeks ago first, if that's okay. But as I said, you punctuate with whatever you'd like as well. The AI, the Somnium Files. Now, I know we talked a little about this, but overall, how did you find this experience?
I really liked the game. I thought it was a nice mesh of kind of like, it reminded me of a Danganronpa meets the Zero Time trilogy, kind of, with how it was set up, because it's just like this super gory and macabre sort of storyline. And, you know, even the first scene that you get in the game is just like, I don't want to like destroy the initial shock for anybody, but just even the first scene in the game is like, whoa, what's going on here? That's a little crazy. And yeah. I definitely enjoyed that. And there's also a lot of twists and turns in the game. It kept me guessing up until probably the last story arc. By the last story arc in there, I kind of had it figured out, but it did keep me guessing quite a while, and I enjoy that, because a lot of the times I can figure out these plots ahead of time, and that's just no fun. So I liked that it kept me on my toes.
Yeah, I like that. How did you find, like, I know you've played some visual novels in the past, but you know, I think it's fair to say you don't play a massive amount of traditional VNs. So this one, you know, because of the escape room elements, it's a bit more involved, I suppose, than your normal VN. But one of the great things is that it still has the flowchart in the game, and it's very easy to use. So I'm thinking here perhaps more of cleanup as well for trophies and things. How did you find all that sort of experience? It's very streamlined, or?
Yeah. Well, the timelines, the flowchart that they had in there really reminded me of Zero Time Dilemma, because those games also had the flowchart in them. But Somnium Files definitely was a lot more streamlined than Zero Time Dilemma and other games in that series, because you knew kind of exactly which storyline you had to go and complete to be able to unlock further parts of the story. Mm-hmm. Whereas in something like Zero Time Dilemma, you were kind of left guessing, because there were so many different branching paths that you could have been missing something in. So I definitely found it a lot more streamlined, especially for trophy cleanup. I think it only took me maybe 15 to 30 minutes to clean up any of the miscellaneous trophies that I was missing, because they had so many different places where you could just go into the timeline.
I like that. And then one of the things I love about Japanese games is that their sense of humor is, I mean, it's very crude, I suppose, as we see it in the Western style. Now, a lot of that, especially in recent year or so, has become censored or become altered in translation. This is a game that it appears like that on the surface with the animation, but there's some pretty crude lines in the humor here. How did you, were you expecting that sort of thing? Do you think it maybe went a little far, or did you enjoy that side of it as well? The overly Japanese-iness of the game.
So I found the sexual humor in it to be rather funny at first, but then, you know, when every other scene is, hey, look, it's the girl with the big tits, or, you know, oh, I've got a hard on, or whatever it was in that game. Mm-hmm. Just every other scene seemed to have something like that. And I thought by the end, it was getting a little old and a little tired. Would have been a little more novel if they had just peppered it in throughout. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And of course, the official term, if you're looking for that there, listeners, the large breasts is, of course, tits off the screen. That's what we refer to at Eigen in Viennes, the tits off the screen moment, which is present in that game. But look, you know, we also talked about that this week about, you know, breast size and in relation to head size, but we won't go there, you know, because it's probably not required, especially when we can talk about why you played Gravity Rush on the Vita.
So Gravity Rush on the Vita is a product of the Maidens event. So in the Maidens event, everyone gets to pick three different female-led games for which they'll get triple points. And of course, me being, you know, the sneaky, conniving, mathematical person who I am, I went, which game can give me the most points? And that would have been Gravity Rush. And I have both Gravity Rush and Gravity Rush Remastered, but with the completion percentage and the time to platinum, Gravity Rush actually gives a lot more points, like 200 more points than the Gravity Rush Remastered version. So of course, I'm going to go with the one that gives you more points. And I really wish I hadn't. This game was just... I had the worst time with it. There were several times where I was just like in tears because I couldn't get some of these trials. I know it's not called trials, but they're essentially little mini games within the game that have you just racing to pick up different gems or racing through different checkpoints or defeating a certain number of monsters in a limited amount of time. And these trials, they were insane. You know, I've heard multiple times that the controls are so much better on the PlayStation 4 than they are on the Vita. So apparently if you're looking to play this game, do it on the PS4 and not on the Vita. Otherwise you might be reduced to tearful fits of rage like I was.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, on the PS4, the remastered, it's a brilliant game with moments of frustration. I think on the Vita, it's a frustrating game with moments of brilliance, perhaps, all tied in with the controls. I wonder if you'll ever get to Gravity Rush 2, because it's the same but quite different, a much more fleshed out game as well. So I don't know if that'll also, I mean, also a female protagonist, obviously. So maybe good for the points in the future.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I heard it's about twice the length of the regular Gravity Rush. And, you know, I think if I were to play Gravity Rush Remastered, it would have to be just like I went temporarily insane. I mean, I do have it purchased, so I'll probably get around to it eventually, but it'll have to be one of those moments of like temporary insanity that gets me to play it.
I like that. I like that. Now, the next one, if you're happy for me to lead still, the next one I'd like to throw out is a game that it came out broken as far as the platinum was concerned, which again is not a major problem because there are games behind trophies, listeners. I know it's shocking. So not a major problem, but now it has been fixed. And I know there was time, say, where you could only get the platinum with the physical, but this is a really beautiful walking sim puzzler, I suppose I would call it. Some wonderful animation in this game. Could you talk to this game, Silence, Eigen?
Sure. So Silence is actually the sequel to a PC game that came out early 2000s, I believe. But it basically follows an orphan brother and sister. They're in, I believe it's World War II wartime. And at the beginning of the game, it's just them rushing into a bomb shelter. And then you're taken into their dream world called Silence. Silence is the name of the dream world. And you're basically trying to find your way out of Silence. It's explained in the game that Silence is kind of this world between life and death. And if you stay in Silence, it means you choose death. And if you escape Silence, it means you choose life. So the game will actually give you the choice whether or not you want to stay in there or not. But that's the entire journey, is just trying to find your way through the world of Silence. And as you mentioned, it's just this, it's visually stunning. The game is, it's so beautiful. That's the thing that drew me to it. I saw how beautiful the artwork looked in the trailer, and so that's why I purchased it. And as you mentioned, the Platinum was broken for some time, but I believe within the last year or so, they went ahead and fixed it. And so now you are able to get the Platinum. And it's a pretty quick Platinum. I think maybe 10 hours or so, about what it took me to get it.
I think that is definitely one to check out, Silence, listeners, if you haven't come across it. And I believe, I'm going to throw it out here. I know this first surfaced actually on the Asian store, on the Hong Kong store. Oh, but yes, there is. That's what I thought. There are two stacks of that game as well, if it so interests you. Although that's a longer one to play twice, I suppose. Now, look, The Count Lucanor. I've been told by many people I should play this game. I have a feeling you're not going to echo the recommendation. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you like spam, so I'd say go for it. It's a very short game, so very quick platinum. So whether or not you like it, you're going to have a short time with it. I personally did not like this game. I am not a big fan of horror, and this game is just like pixelated, grotesque horror. Like, probably about 10 minutes into the game, you see these satanic goats just dancing around the body of their goat herd, which they have recently dismembered. And so you've got 8-bit pixelated just goat herd intestines sprawled across the screen.
You made a fantastic comment that I read here, and you said here, just booted it up and saw on the screen it was a Radalaika, friends of the show Radalaika, and thought, oh man, at least this one has a 50% completion rate, so it's not as bad as their other games.
Yeah.
What is going on there?
I don't like playing games just because they have the easy platinums. This is actually my second Radalaika game. The first one being 36 Fragments of Midnight, which I played because I thought that the Midnight character was just so adorable, I had to play it. So, and this one, I actually didn't know was a Radalaika game until across my TV it said Radalaika Games. And I'm just like, oh. Okay,
I can feel the wave of distaste from here.
I mean,
they're not all bad, you know.
I mean, there's some of them that look like they'd be interesting to me. Syrup in the Ultimate Suite looks really cool. Their new Shiba Inu game looks nice. So there's some of them that I'm willing to try out. It's just, you know, the 90, 95% platinum completion rates are a little distasteful to me.
So you're looking at it the wrong way. You know, you're all over the stats, but what you fail to understand is the game, the closer to 100% it is, the more people have enjoyed it. They've wanted to finish it. I mean, these games at 1 or 2%, nobody finishes. Nobody wants to finish those games. Final Fantasy 13, for example. But these games at 95%, people, 100%, they want to finish them. They're enjoying them. That's what that percentage means. Don't you agree?
I mean, when it takes 5 minutes to get 100%, it's like, oh, that's just 5 minutes of my time. And, you know, speaking of Final Fantasy 13, I just finished the third game a couple days ago. So, you know, there are people that want to finish those.
Okay, let's get into that. But look, I'm just going to assure you, listeners, sometimes 5 minutes is all you need. You know, you can have a wonderful time in 5 minutes, Igan, especially as you age, I can assure you. But let's go across now to Final Fantasy 13. Now, I'm interested, you've completed the saga. Now, unfortunately, this is only available on PS3. It at this stage, well, I suppose we can say with Definity now, it's never been ported to the PS4. What is the experience of the saga for you? Which one did you like best? Did you enjoy the whole experience? Let us see some insight.
Sure. So I probably played Final Fantasy 13 for the first time back in 2012, so it was several years after it had come out. But the first thought in my mind when I played it was, wow, this game is beautiful. It's probably one of the best graphically stunning games on the PS3, to be honest. The entire series was just fantastic in that regard. A lot of people like to talk about the what do they call it? The hallway syndrome that you get in the first Final Fantasy 13, where it just seems like you're being thrown down a corridor with no deviation. But actually within that game, once you get to probably about the halfway point, a little past the halfway point, you then have a big open world like you do in almost all the other Final Fantasy games. So I think people who have that opinion of the first game just haven't played it long enough to get to the open world part. I really liked the first game a lot, but I think I preferred the second game out of all of them. The second game was definitely my favorite one. It has a little bit of a Pokemon aspect to it because you're going around and collecting the monsters of the areas to fight alongside you in battle. You've also got kind of like this flow of time. You can go backwards and forwards in time, and I enjoy games that kind of have that time paradox aspect to them quite a bit.
How does it hold up? Is it still very playable?
I think so. You know, this was my first time playing Final Fantasy 13. I started it 2 weeks ago, and I thought it measured up to some of the JRPGs that I play today on the PlayStation 4. I didn't think there was anything wrong with the battle systems. There was nothing wrong with the gameplay whatsoever. It was all pretty intuitive. It's definitely more of an active battle system than a turn-based combat. So people who enjoy the active types of battle systems will enjoy this one. The reason why it took me so long to start Lightning Returns is it has this time aspect in it. So every hour of real life time is 1 day of in-game time. And you know, I like playing JRPGs because I can go around and look in every nook and cranny and open every treasure chest and just do exploration. And so it was very frightening to me to start a game where you're limited by time. But actually, within the game, there's an ability called Chronostasis that you're able to use, which will pause the in-game time and allow you to explore freely as much as you want. And you know, if you use that ability appropriately, you're not limited whatsoever.
I like that because that's one of my biggest fears as well. I think when I started Persona 5, because I don't like being inhibited by a time limit as well, but I think it sounds similar. Once you get into it, it's not nowhere near as confining and as difficult to deal with as you first originally thought, I suppose. What I find interesting about this game is that I'm not going to go back to the PS3, you know, for anything at this point. So it has been a shame that it hasn't been ported. And I am working my way through the Final Fantasies 15, 14, 12, and 5 minutes of 10 so far. So I'm looking forward to getting to 13. But I realized the other day that this is actually backwards compatible on the Xbox. So there's really no excuse. I could play this game on a current gen system of sorts. So I don't know if anyone has played it on the Xbox. Please reach out to me and let me know. You know, how it plays. I assume it would be equally satisfying. And then, look, there are two more we'll touch on just quickly. One was one of my games of last year, I think, and it warms my heart to see that you played it. I did play this game on the Switch, where it first originated before coming to the PS4. Now, again, it's not a game for everyone by any stretch of the imagination. There are listeners now going, yeah, this is totally a CJ game, fuck it. But, you know, that is true to a degree. It's very abstract. It has some beautiful animation. It's a simplistic game, I think that's fair to say, in that as it brings in elements, it sort of brings them in one at a time, and it compounds on itself, so it never feels overwhelming. Again, now I have not played for the trophy, so I'm not sure how the trophies work in this game, but it's a wonderful experience. It's really not that long, about 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours, I think, and it's something probably everyone should play who's interested in game design and generally art, you know, over the top. So how did you find the wonderful Gris, Eigen?
You know, I loved it. I'm a big sucker for games that have beautiful art and really good music, and this game had both of those. The art style, everything looks like it's hand-drawn, and then it looks like they used watercolor to color it in, which I thought was really interesting. I don't think I've seen an art style in any game quite like it, but it's very beautiful. The soundtrack also goes along with the game really well. In the game, you're actually working through the 5 stages of grief, and you can tell, like, when you're in the angry stage, you have this really angry music. So the music to me was definitely emoted the emotions that you're supposed to be experiencing in this game. And as you said, it's a very short game. It took probably 5 or so hours to platinum. The trophies are really easy. You have chapter select, so if you miss anything, you can easily go back to it. But really good game. Really good game.
Yeah, it really is. There's a handful of games, I think, that, I mean, in different styles, you know, in this indie sphere that really set the agenda, like Florence, which again, unfortunately, is not on console or not on PlayStation. Her Story as well, also not on. And then even this Dark Knights with Poe and Runro, also not on console yet. But they all are pushing the genre a little bit. And I think, again, you know, it's an artsy game, of course, you know, there's no shooting in this one. But it's worthy of your time. Now, the last one I know nothing about, but I understand it is your latest completion. Therefore, it is mandatory that we learn about it and find out. And this is Crystal Defenders.
Sure. So Crystal Defenders is a PlayStation 3 game. I also learned that it was probably a port from the Android or iPhone onto the PlayStation 3. So it's kind of simplistic in its gameplay because it was a phone game originally. But it's also a Final Fantasy game, just not a mainline Final Fantasy game. But you do have various classes that are intrinsic to Final Fantasy, like the Black Mage, the Time Mage, the Warrior, the Thief. Actually, if you've played Final Fantasy Tactics, a lot of the same classes are in this game that were in that game. But basically, it's a tower defense style game. You basically set up your army along a route, and they have to be able to kill the oncoming enemy lines before they exit the map and steal your crystals. So it's a very strategy-oriented game. There's 12 different levels that you play through, and it doesn't sound like a lot, but each level takes about 15 or so minutes to complete because there's 30 different waves of enemies that you have to fight through. So it's a very interesting game if you like strategy-related games. It doesn't have a platinum, unfortunately.
Well, despite not having a platinum, I think it's still valid, Eigen. I really do. So, look, listeners, what can I throw on you this week? Well, look, I want to start with a really special game that I discovered. Now, yes, it is a visual novel, but it's more complex than your average visual novel. And I'm talking here of Will a Wonderful World. So this game has been out since the middle of 2019. But again, it released on the Asian stores, on the Hong Kong store, I understand, even though it was in English at the time, the Hong Kong version, but it only came later, I think earlier this year, to Western stores. And the only reason I did pick up the Asian version, but the reason I finally got to it, listeners, was that our local EB store, I suppose all the EB stores, were having a massive sale at the moment. They're throwing out everything. And they have some amazing good prices on indie games that if you were to try and import these onto disc, it would cost a fortune. So I don't think they really know what they have sometimes. And they were selling these off, and they actually had this Will a Wonderful World, a physical copy, which is, you know, it's a bit rare in this country to start with, I think, to even find one at this point. And then it was half price off as well. And it was already a low price. So it was just a steal. So it was a sign to play it. So this Will a Wonderful World, it's by WMY Studios. Now, this is actually, it's a one-guy studio. It's by this Wang Mayoyi dude. And look, it's an impressive feat for one person. I mean, it'd be impressive for a whole team even. Even though it is a one-person game, there's nothing budget about this visual novel at all. I mean, the animation, the hand drawing is beautiful. The music score that accompanies it, and there's a lot of music in this game, and it's very atmospheric, very set to the text. It's really wonderful. But look, What it is it's a, as you'd expect with a Japanese visual novel, it's playing with different timelines. So it presents itself as nine different stories, if you like, nine different characters that have some interrelationship between themselves or some between a few of the characters, but ultimately across different time spans. Now, you play like a godlike figure, which is very Japanese, I suppose, where you're basically, you're changing the fates, if you like, the course of history. So people write you letters because, you know, they're in this situation in their life, and you basically have to reinterpret the letter so that it works out in a more favorable way or a negative way if you're going for the bad endings. There are usually multiple sort of endings off each letter. One of the great things about this VN is it doesn't lock you in, at least not till the very end. It doesn't lock you into a bad ending path. So at any point you can actually go back. It's sort of all on a very straightforward flow chart and change the directions that you're processing, and you can see all the different endings, or you can see how many endings there are, and you can even switch between the endings after you've played it. So unlike a normal visual novel where you have to make a ton of saves, you don't really need to make any saves. Having said that, there is a very weird mechanic. The last part of the game, you have to play in 90 minutes. Now, if you're playing without a guide, that could be a push. Now, you only need to finish that in 90 minutes if you want the good ending. So it's a weird concept to have a visual novel with a time element that decides the ending, if you like, more than almost a content. But that aside, it's something that I would recommend playing. It's no good as a skip VN because there is a skip, but it's incredibly slow. And the way it works, you're much better off reading it, of course. It's around a 15-hour read. So the mechanic at play is that you read these letters, usually two letters from both sides of the situation, but seeing the situation differently because of two different people. You can then move the paragraphs around, or certain sentences. You can move them between letters or up and down in their position. And of course, this will change the flow of events in the letters and hopefully lead to a more positive outcome or a different outcome. It does get a little bit more complicated because later on, you can only move certain things sideways or up. So what I'd suggest is if you are going to play this and you're playing it for the story, which the story is fantastic, so it's definitely the reason to play for it, and you don't want to deal with this mechanic, or you want to just get through it in the fastest time possible while enjoying it, is to use a guide. There is a wonderful guide on Knopf's Guides by Sean that it basically walks you exactly through every decision. What's so nice about this VN is you can actually put the positions in the letter you like. You can even solve it if you like, and then if it's not the right answer, you can check the guide, come back and solve it. It only takes an extra, you know, 30 seconds or so that way. I would suggest probably following the guide closely, only because the paths branch out a lot. It could just save you time in the cleanup. But look, it's really dark as well. I mean, there's some lighter stories in there, but there's some incredibly dark stories in there, which, again, not surprising for the Japanese, although, I mean, this is a Chinese developer, I should say, but, you know, still VN in style, I suppose. It's well worth your time. I think it's moving. It's incredibly sad as you realize what happens, and then when you get to the full ending as well. It's not, I don't think it's foreseeable. I'm obviously not going to spoil it, but it's a lovely sort of twist at the end. And look, you know, the central character, if you like, is a dog named Will. And that's really all you need to know about it, other than, look, I think it's one of my favorite VNs for this year that I've read so far. And I would put it up highly there with the other ones that I've enjoyed, like Deathmark and House of Fata Morgana as well. So next, what can I drop on you? Look, I'm just going to drop a really little bit of this Ghost of Tsushima, or whatever they want to call it. This Sony Prodigy game or whatever, a beautiful walled corridor game of sorts, the illusion of an open world. Look, no, it is an open world, so it's not an illusion, but the story sort of, it pushes you down this sort of cutscene heavy path where sometimes you don't know if you're in a cutscene or not. The screen narrows and it doesn't. Look, it's beautiful in its own way. I think this game is a little lost on me. It's obviously stylized heavily on Japan and of the time, but I think, you know, and I'm not bashing the game at all, but I think for a 50-hour game, I think it's going to be anyone hard-pressed to say that while the story is really amazing, the combat doesn't start to irritate the shit out of them. It's got this bizarre standoff feature, again, which is not a spoiler. You discover it straight away, where you can It's basically you have the option to go into this mode, if you like, whether they see you or not, you know, when you creep up on them or whatever. And then you're just basically holding the triangle until the first guy moves. And as long as you release it quickly enough after he moves, you know, not beforehand, you'll slice him in half. And it goes side on. It goes 2.5D at that time. It just reeks of Mortal Kombat. And unfortunately, you know, it's the same every time. Like, you know, I'd love the word fatality and something different to happen maybe, but... You know, that aside, I don't know, like the story seems far more interesting to me at this stage than the combat. But having said that, there is a pretty cool mini game there. It involves quite a few button pushes with the bamboo slicing. So I won't go into it, but don't have too many drinks before you attempt those, I can tell you, because some of those chains get pretty long and there's not a lot of time. But I will definitely finish it at some point. But I think it's unfortunate that it came out after Last of Us 2, because I think it would have been better maybe to play this first and then Last of Us 2, because obviously both heavy story narrative games. Last of Us 2 obviously looks in a different stylized setting, but does look much better, I feel, and I think it plays better as well. So, you know, I mean, if this game is for you, I think you'll love it, but I don't think this is one necessarily you're going to race out and buy, maybe like The Last of Us 2 was. And then, you know, just to flip the scales completely, I found a wonderful 100% game. I don't know if this will interest you. This is the Pool Slide Story. So this developer, they make some bizarre ass, like mini sims, if you like. Little, like, I won't say city building, but like park building. They've got a shopping mall one or whatever else. Most of these games, though, are only available on the Japanese store. They're not localized and they're only in Japanese. They would be difficult to play in Japanese because you need to meet requirements of guests and they want certain things. So if you didn't understand, it would be difficult. But If you're an older gamer, you know, if you can throw back to the time of like your Sim Hospital or even Theme Park, you know, the old Theme Park, wow, what a fantastic game that was, then, and you enjoyed that, then this is the perfect little game for you. Admittedly, it is only 100%, takes around 9 hours or so. I got all the trophies except for the playing for enough years. So everything is in 10, you know, you have to play for 10 years. I think I finished everything I needed to do. I got to the 5 stars after about year 7. So you can sort of just, you know, keep spamming the button and it'll pass the years to get to 10. There's one trophy I don't really understand yet with the Karaboot pool, but you know, maybe someone from Japan will help me with that at some point, but I'm a little stuck there. I'm sure it's something simple. I'm sure I've unlocked it. I'm just not using it the right way. But it's a beautiful little micromanager, if you like. It's a very positive game in that you can't go bankrupt. Almost every day throughout the first 6 years, I ended in the negative. And then, you know, it just helps you out a bit and pushes you up. So you can build whatever you want almost. And it's got that, you know, that fun, like, you know, every day you're looking, the ticket sales go up and you've got a bit more money and you can play around. So it's a time waster, but it's a beautiful time waster in its own way. It's such a nice little small game. And then, look, I don't know. I don't know what else I want to drop. I've been playing a little bit more Sword Art Online, Alicization, Lycrosis. It's a lot better than I first thought, but it's still early days. So perhaps too early to say. I could talk about the new stack of Hero Express, the EU stack, which now brings us out to 3 stacks of that side-scrolling 2D racer, I suppose, if you like. It, look, it's fun or whatever. Each level takes half an hour. But, you know, again, another time-waster game. I could drop a little of this We Should Talk on you, which... It reminds me a lot of the FMV Telling Lies, obviously on a much smaller scale. It's by that Whitehorn Digital, which, you know, bring us such things as that Honey game, which was a bit of a nightmare, but they were the publisher there, not the developer. They're the developer in this case. It's a game that overstays its welcome for 2 playthroughs. It's a sort of a text-based game where you're choosing options. For 2 playthroughs, it's really interesting, but then after that, it's just the same. It doesn't have enough variation, or not for me. To get all the trophies, there are 9 playthroughs, but I believe one is glitched at the moment. Now, they will patch that, but, you know, we'll wait and see, because I know there are other games sometimes a bit dicey as well. So if that concerns you, you might want to wait. That's in the 3rd playthrough. And there is a wonderful text guide by Velvet. Each playthrough takes around 15 minutes. There is no skip option. There's multiple choices to be entered in as well. But as I said, after the first 2 playthroughs, there's very little variation in the story. Well, there's so little that you can sort of foresee what the other paths would roughly roughly be, and the central characters remain the same each time. So it does get very boring very, very quickly, unfortunately. And then I suppose the only other one I will throw out today is this Lost Odyssey. So this is Redbeard Rick's pick for the Patreon game. And I know this is a big game, and I know it's also, I think it's like a 2007 game. So it's an old game, you know, me and old games, like, I don't know, it doesn't always work. But one of the wonderful things about the Xbox is this backwards compatibility and the ease. And I just, having been playing it, I just think, you know, this is such a missed opportunity for Sony, because I'm not interested in getting a PS2 or even, you know, plugging in the PS3, you know, outside of the game we have to play later on. But if I had the option, and I know some of these games are available on PS4, but if I had the option the same way as the X, just to drop, you know, some money and buy this up-res version, I think I probably would be more interested. And I mean, I don't know the amount of work and money that goes into bringing these games across in the backwards compatibility, but it's got to be a goldmine afterwards, because you just drop the money and it does look good. You know, it doesn't look dated or well. Of course, the facial animations this game are dated, but they're dated from the period. You know, they can't change the game, but you know, the cutscenes, it looks great, you know, and it's playing well. I'll admit I don't fully know what's going on. It totally has that you know, Magitek feel to it, like Final Fantasy feel. And Rick has just told me literally as I'm recording his message that it was by one of the creators of the Final Fantasy, the writers, so it makes total sense. Seems to have a heavy element on these dream sequences. So you're an immortal or whatever, and you're obviously going to survive forever, but you keep picking up all these dream threads that explain different stories throughout your life. And I've just got to the point, maybe early on, maybe 3 hours, 4 hours in, where I'm going to meet this other immortal and we're going to see this amazing thing or something. I think it's in the ocean. So look, I look forward to getting more into it. I think it's one of those games that if you don't like JRPGs, you know, or RPGs, not going to be of relevance to you. But if you do, and if you like cutscene heavy turn-based JRPG, and you haven't played this game, then maybe it's for you. It's funny Rick picked this game, because like 3 or 4 years ago, a dude I played a lot with at the time, this was the only game he played on Xbox and 100%. And he's like, you've got to play this, CJ. It's an amazing game. I'm like, yeah, I'm not fucking touching the Xbox or whatever. How funny, huh? And now it's finally come around or whatever. And I am playing it. And I think, you know, from a mature gamer, perhaps, it's a wonderful little game. I don't really get the combat system. It seems pretty straightforward, or there's this weird ring situation going on where I think it might be a timing thing. But look, you know, the more I get into it, I'm sure the more I will discover. So I want to thank Rick for that pick. And that's sort of my go-to Xbox game at the moment, I think, which is wonderful, you know, just to dive into it. I sort of have a go-to Xbox game. I've got the Ghosts of Tsushima or whatever on the PS4 to carry me over there. And I have this wonderful Risque VN on the PC Steam, which, look, I'm sure some of you would be interested in, but most of you perhaps not. It's got a wonderful Japanese name, but basically translates into naked butlers. And I can assure you, the butlers, they're very naked. And the whole premise is just those wild, erotically amusing, and it's been a real eye-opener for me what is available on Steam versus what is available on the PS4 or even the Xbox. So I look forward to getting more into that visual novel. And look, if you're interested, I could always share more perhaps at another time after the lights are out perhaps. But look, I think I've bored you enough there of what I've been playing. Of course, don't forget, you know, at the end of the show, we have the Platinum Shoutout. So by all means, get your revenge. Show me what you've been playing as well. Because as we've, you know, as I've referenced before, one of the great things about doing the podcast is learning about games. And of course, I learn from our guests, but I'm also learning from the wonderful community, both in the Discord and in the Shoutouts as well. So by all means, please drop those in at the end. But look, we're going to take a short break, have a refresher, fill your drink there, throw some ice cubes in, and we'll be right back with Eigen to talk the Tales of games. See you soon. The thousand winds is puffing against your doom, and the suitors around you will circle your home, begging and asking for more. This wind will trick you into loving him, the rich man. We should have found by you a ring. The wise girl will. Okay, so welcome back, listeners. We're gonna take a look at the Tales of games. Now, I've never played any of these. They intimidate me. They're massive, massive games, or whatever else. As we alluded to in the beginning, they've been around for some time, since 1995. Surprisingly to me, they use a real-time fighting system, which I'm sure we'll learn a little bit about today, the linear motion battle system over the traditional turn-based JRPG. And I understand that the games are all freestanding within their own sort of sphere or whatever, although they link with similar animation, combat, and music styles. In fact, I don't know if you knew this, Eigen, but the composer, now I'll butcher this, so you'll have to forgive me, listeners, Sakuraba, and Shinji Tamuro, they've worked together on many of these titles, but Sakuraba did Star Ocean, Mario Golf, Mario Tennis, and some games in the Dark Souls. So he's got a pretty good grounding there. So I suppose before we even get into this series, can I ask you, how is the music in these games that you've played?
You know, it's there's some really good music in the games, but overall it's unremarkable. It doesn't detract from the experience, but it doesn't, you know, I wouldn't call it fantastic music like I would some other games.
Okay, no Final Fantasy then. So look, why don't we start off at the beginning? What do you like about these games?
So what I like about these games typically are the interactions between the characters in the games. They always have a cast of six or so characters, and you know, you've got typically your little kid character, your older guy who's just hanging around the young kids. You know, they're typical JRPG ages, 16 to like early 20s, going out to save the world kind of thing. But they all do have really good interpersonal relationships that evolve during their journeys. And I find that to be one of the most amusing and just awesome parts of the games, is how they evolve as characters and how their interpersonal relationships evolve during the games.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because the little bit of reading that I did sort of pushed the prominent, you know, theme of the games is the coexistence between different races within the game and the interrelationships. As you say, look, it is a JRPG, so I must ask, how is the hair?
The hair? not as crazy as in... You know, it's not anything cloud-esque, or...
What a shame.
Yeah, they're pretty normal hairstyles for the most part, I think.
I like that. Now, there are quite a lot of games in this series, and they're quite long as well, so they're a massive investment. What, and I do understand, is that correct that they are freestanding games? Could you technically sort of jump in anywhere? And if that is sort of true, where would you recommend starting?
For the most part, you're able to jump in anywhere. There's Tales of Xillia 2, which is a direct sequel to Tales of Xillia, so you wouldn't want to start 2 without playing 1, though I suppose you could. You'd just be missing quite a bit of backstory. And then in Tales of Symphonia, there's a sequel game. It's actually one of the two games that I haven't played, so I'm not sure how well those two play off each other. And then on PlayStation 4, you've got Tales of Berseria and Tales of Zestiria, which Zestiria came out before Berseria, but in the timeline, Berseria happens before Zestiria. But with those two games, you could play them completely separate from each other. You'd just be missing out on little Easter eggs, but no real plot overlay in those two, not really. And so as far as where to start, my personal favorites would be Tales of Graces or Tales of Xillia on the PlayStation 3, or if you're on the PlayStation 4, Tales of Berseria would be a great one. I'd actually say that Tales of Berseria is maybe my all-time favorite game. So very high praise for that one.
I was wondering if that one was going to come up, because that is... the one that I have on my system that I always think about. So what I want to ask you, obviously it's a JRPG, so there's going to be a level of grinding here. And again, I'm not familiar with these games, listeners. What's the level of grind, and does it sort of lock content behind the grind? Is it in effect level gated, the game as well?
I wouldn't say that the games are level gated at all. Throughout most of them, well, I think in all of the ones that I've played, the only two that I haven't played are Tales of Symphonia, Dawn of the New World, and Tales of Vesperia. In all the other ones, I believe there's difficulty modes that you can use. So most of the games start off with you being able to use easy, normal, and hard. And then if you play a certain number of battles on hard, you can unlock higher difficulties and then higher difficulties on top of that, usually with trophies associated with beating the games on those difficulties. But you can go through the entire game on easy and then change it to chaos difficulty just for the final boss and get your trophy. So if you're having any difficulties with the game, you can bump the difficulty down. Usually I find, though, that I have to bump the difficulty up because it's too easy. So I don't think you'll have a problem being underleveled in these games. And as far as the grinding goes, yeah, some of the trophies, they do have grinds associated with them. There's typically one or two per game that involves a significant grind. However, usually you'll want to play these games across two playthroughs, because in the New Game Plus, they give you what they call a grade shop, and you can purchase upgrades like 5x experience or hold 3x the amount of the items that you normally can, or things like that that make secondary and onward playthroughs much more easy and much more fun. And usually by the time you're done with your second playthrough, you're already through whatever grind it is that you're going through. I didn't find the grinds to be too tedious in any of these games after you've already finished all the content.
Okay, that's refreshing. I like that, particularly after Dragon's Quest at the moment. So what do I want to ask? Oh, about the combat system. So this linear motion battle system, which I understand is loosely the same, if tweaked perhaps between each version of the game. How does this play? You know, is it enjoyable over 100 hours that these games take? Or how do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah. I love the battle systems in these games. And in each of the games, they find something a little new and unique to do with the battle system, to change it up just a little bit from the previous versions of the games. Basically, what it is you can free run around the enemies, and then you have a certain number of actions that you can take when attacking the enemy, so you can build up combos. And a lot of the times you'll have trophies associated with building up a long combo chain, FYI. But you'll have a certain number of actions that you can take to build up a combo. And then you'll have to back off for a couple seconds to refill your action meter before you can go and start attacking the enemies again. So definitely not turn-based. And I really do like the battle systems in these games. Sometimes they, in some of the games, you can link characters together and perform special parts of combat or special abilities that these two characters that you link together share. So some really dynamic things that they do with the combat.
Okay, now, from what you've said, these games sound quite approachable, but, I mean, you know, they're not your Final Fantasy, they're not maybe your Ni No Kuni, they're not perhaps even your Dragon's Quest, you know, in prominence, at least in the West here, and at least as I see it from my experience, although, you know, as we said, they do very well in sales and everything else. Are these Tales games that you've played, are they as easy to get started with? because I'm thinking here, I've looked at the trophy guides and there's a lot going on. It looks to me a bit of a Star Ocean situation where you might need your pen and your paper, and you might need to do a bit of homework first and all of this stuff. So do they play sort of as relaxed as many of these other JRPGs, or is there a bit of work here required if you are going for the platinum and the trophies?
So I think for a lot of the games, there are missable trophies that you should be aware of. However, as I mentioned, there are New Game Plus modes. And on the New Game Plus, you can actually storm through the game very quickly to get anything that might have been missable the first time around. So, you know, as far as trophies goes, I don't think there's anything that's too terrible. As mentioned earlier, some things can be a little grindy. Or, you know, in some of them, they have you collect all pieces of equipment, things like that. But as far as accessibility goes, I think they're just as easy as Final Fantasy games to get into. Final Fantasy was the only JRPG series that I had any experience with before picking up a Tales game, and I found it very easy to get into.
Okay, I like that. Now, I have to ask, I mean, fishing is such an important part of any JRPG. Is there a fishing game of some sorts within the Tales games that you've played, and how does it rank? Is it a good one?
There's not any fishing.
What? Oh, no. Igen. I don't know. How is that possible?
I don't know. They have card games as the mini game in many of the titles. But
that is shocking.
I can't recall any fishing happening in any of them, even by NPCs.
So now I'm scared. Are you telling me there's probably no logging here of the forest? Maybe no mining of the mountain or the stone? Is these not parts of the game either?
Not that I can recall. If my memory serves me correctly, I don't think so. Occasionally, you'll have to find like things within the map, but definitely no chopping down of the trees or anything like that.
Wow, I'm still flabbergasted by no fishing game. I thought that was a rite of passage. I didn't think it could be a JRPG without a fishing game. But look, there you go. I've been proven wrong. Now, I want to ask again against the games that you've played, particularly looking at Berseria here on the PS4, because this is the one that interests me the most. And without knowing the game, what's a sort of a realistic time for, first off, finishing the story, say, for this game, and then secondly, if you were going for the plat? How many hours, realistically, not what the guide says, are we looking at, do you think?
So just if you're just playing through, not worrying about trophies or being a completionist or anything like that, I'd say somewhere around 40 to 60 hours for the story, and then maybe double that if you're going for the platinum. So 120-ish hours for a platinum. And I think that's pretty standard for most of the Tales game, give or take 20 or so hours. Tales of Symphonia, I don't have a platinum in that one, but that one takes like 4 or 5 playthroughs, which is part of the reason why I don't have a platinum for it. Too many playthroughs for my taste. But with the other ones, you can usually finish it up within 2 playthroughs, maybe a short third playthrough. I actually recently wrote a guide for Tales of Graces, and I think I rated that one at 120 hours for the platinum.
Excellent. And then, look, I want to ask as well, just because I see on the store, again, it's nothing, you know, unusual with these sort of games and Japanese, you know, role-playing games in general, but there are some microtransactionable items you can buy. I think some are costumes, but there are also, and I'm thinking more of the PS4 games here, Zestra, and this one here that we're talking about, Berseria, there are items, I believe, you can buy that may, you know, make the platinum journey or even the game journey shorter or more easier. If that's the correct English, they're easier, I suppose, listeners. Are these necessary? Do they add anything to the game, or are they? What's your opinion on these things?
So I personally purchase all of the costumes. Yes. But obviously those do nothing apart from being like cosmetic niceties. And I don't know which What does it say is available to purchase?
I think you could buy, like, I was looking at it before, you can buy ingredients. They sort of come in packs or whatever else. My understanding is that it can give you a boost at the start of the game. I think there's an XP boost or something like this as well. And there's a whole lot of, none of them are expensive, but there are a few different ones, a few little things or something, which I've seen, you know, people sort of say that it just shortens the game length. I mean, maybe it detracts from the game as well. I'm not sure, but it sounds like you never use them, so definitely not necessary.
No, I'd say in the game, almost everything is pretty easy to come across. You'd probably just be wasting your money if you bought any of the upgrades.
Perfect, perfect. And then just sort of as we're wrapping out here, I think we've already said it, but if you had one game to pick out of this series, if someone was going to dip their feet into it, but only in the one, which one would it be? And I suppose what should they go in expecting from it?
Well, if you're stuck with a PS3, go for Tales of Graces, because I wrote a wonderful guide for that, and let's just toot my own horn here. But no, seriously, Tales of Graces, if you're stuck with a PS3, if you have the option of PS4, definitely Berseria out of any of them. As I said earlier, it's my favorite game, probably in the grand total scheme of everything, my favorite game. And you should just go in expecting a really great story and really great characters and a pretty accessible battle system, as well as just mechanics in general.
So I know it's one of those games that many gamers and many trophy hunters have in the backlog. I think they always think that one day they'll get there, but they do keep putting it off. So I hope today, obviously we didn't go into story and stuff. You can't go into story in a 100-hour game. It's insane. But just to give you a little bit of a taste of, you know, maybe it's time to open up the app there, put the disc in the slot and give it a go. Because I think there are many people like me that are a little intimidated by this series in particular, but perhaps it's, as you've said today, it's well worth your time in investing in.
Yes, it definitely is. And you know, the game, it goes by really fast. Like the 40 to 60 hours that you're just spending on the story, you'll just be like, where did my time go? Like, it didn't feel that long. So even if you're daunted a little bit by that timestamp I put on it, definitely know that it goes by fast.
I'd like to thank you, Eigen, for joining us today and for our listeners as well. It's a great pleasure to speak to you. I know we chat a little bit on the Discord, but to actually speak to you voice to voice, I suppose, it's wonderful. It's wonderful to hear all these games that you play. And I think you're one of the causes of me playing more and more of these JRPGs, which I'm really enjoying. So for that, I thank you for your guides as well. Now, if you were so inclined for people to reach out to you and say hi, how would they do so?
You can just hop on PSN profiles and find me. I'm Eigenspace, and I'll be happy to chat with anyone about anything. I'm pretty friendly, I think.
So there you go, listeners. As we said, just a little bit of a surface treatment, if you like, just something to dip your toes in, something to think about. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation today as much as I have. Now, we're going to let Eigen go because she's got to prepare these lists. I believe you're organizing the random draws and everything like this, which I'm very excited to see for our event. So I'm going to leave that in your capable hands. But once again, I would like to thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So there you go, listeners. I hope you like that little taste, if you like, of those massive, massive JRPG series, the Tales of Games. Of course, if you play them already, reach out and let us know what you think about them. And if not, maybe now is the time to consider them, at least. So why don't we turn our hand now to the Push to Platinum shoutouts. Don't forget, if you'd like a shoutout, you can drop it into the PS4 community or in the thread on the Discord. Share your hard work so we can all celebrate it and maybe learn or be inspired by a game that we don't know or we have forgotten about in the dreaded backlog. So to start us off today, Zuche, number 40, Dark Souls 1, Scholar of the First Sin. Yes, it's a skill game to start us off. It's wonderful to see. Followed up by number 41, Lego Ninjago Movie, the video game. I can get down with this, sir. There's a lot going on in this shorter Lego game. I think 15 to 16 hours, but the colours going everywhere. It's kind of crazy, but fantastic. And I believe that game was free at one point recently, too. The Lego studios, they're just giving it away, you know, for something to do for the pandemic. So it's wonderful. I think it was that one. Redbeard Rick, number 180, The Order, 1886. Well, that's total class and quality, although it is quite fun, I'll admit. And then a very late inclusion, literally as we're recording, number 181, Final Fantasy IX, which I believe is his first completion in the lists event. So congratulations, sir. It's a very fast completion too, I believe. It's only, it feels like less than a week, so well done, well done. Eigenspace in with Broken Age. It's a wonderful, I'm going to say point and click game as well. I've just dabbled with that. That's the one in a couple of acts with speedrun trophies and everything. But well, well done. Three Spooky 5U, Trove. Now, I know nothing about this game other than it takes forever. He said here it's like a Minecraft if Minecraft when it was an MMO, which to me sounds terrifying. But if you love Minecraft, then this is the game for you. And Olcero, if you're still alive over there, you know, on the other side of Australia, it's looking quite good for you there, you know. you might outlive us all the way it's going down south at the moment. But you know, if you are in good health, as I hope you are, this could be the opportunity for you to move across from Minecraft, because I see your console seems to be stuck there every day, and try this Trove and let us know. Let us know if it's a valid choice or not. Titanfall 2 as well for Spooky 5U. Congratulations. So that's a great game. I'm impressed you could do that little speedrun thing. You've obviously got skills beyond my meager abilities. Look, he's got another one too. He's been busy. Burnout Paradise Remastered EU. Burnt out with Burnout Paradise. Indeed. So you did that super quick as well, under 2 days, all DLC as well. So that's crazy impressive, because that DLC is a bit of a grind, particularly that motorbike one. So well done. I'm Styling on Your Bro. So look, I don't understand what this game is, listeners. He's been doing it for like weeks or something. So it must be difficult. So we should, you know, pretend interest at this point, you know, and just like, oh wow, it's an amazing, it's a real gamer. But I watched a few minutes of it. He put some up on YouTube and it just looked bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. You know, like you sort of had an epileptic fit over the controller and this is what happened on the screen or something. But, you know, he loves it and therefore it's a valid and worthy game, I'm sure. It's only a 100% game, which makes it even more important to spend thousands of hours trying to complete it. So it's called Pain, which is quite apropos, I think. He's written here, even though I'm a glutton for punishment with my affliction addiction, my dick's balls will be getting off while I spank the monkey in a celebratory fashion. This is why it's good never to read what he writes in advance. Tatty was such an OP character with one hell of a firm grasp and strong arm. That helped a ton while I did that MILF all night long. Wow, see, that's getting pretty close to the line. Well, you know, not to my line, but maybe to some of you listeners. You're like, Jesus, come on, enough. But, you know, look, why not? Why not? Maybe next time I'll proofread it. Probably not. 217, Erica. What could he? This is an innocent game. Surely he's taken a more laissez-faire approach here. An interesting game. I'm glad I took a gander. It was just as joyous as picking Oleander. Velvet's lovely guide prevented confusion. A gift far greater than a doll from Lucene. Lucene? Okay. There you go. Look, that was quite tame for you, sir. So well done. That's good. I'm glad you enjoyed that game, because it's the game that you just have to do like millions of playthroughs. It just never ends. But, you know, again, I wonder if there's that much variation in those endings. Perhaps you can let us know in the Discord, because I know it's not a shorter VN. It's a great scene at the beginning, listeners. It's not a spoiler if you haven't played it, but there's a hand in a box. It's very Seven-esque. I feel like I've said that before, but it's great. I might even play it again just for that scene. Zador VP, number 470, Ratchet and Clank 2016. Completed for Eigen's Push to Plat Trophy event, a decent reimagining of the original Ratchet and Clank game. Congratulations, sir. So that is your first one on the board as well. I know there's been some movement. I see Mr. Tam here chose not to post today, which looks acceptable. He's a New Zealander. You know, we can't imagine, you know, we can't second guess what they're thinking at any time. Maybe sheep, but other than that, it's impossible to know what his reasoning is, but it's a valid reason, whatever it is. But I know he's completed his first game, I believe, too. I hope I haven't misspoken there, sir, but I think that is correct. Gaz Davis, number 58, Death to Rights Retribution. It's another old game from an old man living in the past on PS3. Congratulations, sir. That is it's wonderful to see. We'll see you in the PS5. Furt's My Undies, number 83, Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Congratulations. That's a game, again, I know nothing about. It sounds like it's massively long, though. So well done. Well done. Yolts Rees, number 36, Fallout Shelter. Took me 52 hours and a mad grind. This is the freemium game, I believe, where you can lose your house in microtransactions. No, I don't think it's that bad. Ironically, this probably works better than Fallout 76. So perhaps it's a better experience, too. Maybe someone can confirm that. I'm not sure. But congratulations, sir. That's a fine effort as well, and it's good to see you're a returning poster as well. I hope we're holding some interest for you as the weeks go on. So listeners, it's been wonderful to talk to you again this week. Wonderful to talk to Eigen. I hope you're all doing well. I know many of us, as we said, are re-emerging into the world. For some of us, perhaps in the Victorian parts of Australia, we're moving back into our houses again, and my thoughts are definitely with you at this time, especially after today seeing the numbers again. So I hope our Victorian listeners are safe and well. But for the rest of the world, you know, as I said, I hope the trophies are coming thick and fast for you. I hope you're having a wonderful time with many of these big games that we're starting to see, both from Sony or, you know, even on the Xbox, if you so wish to sully your reputation. So with that in mind, I will just drop a little teaser. Next week's episode is a bit of a retro fest, if you like. We have three wonderful guests that are very focused on retro gaming and retro games. It's not the whole topic of conversation, of course, but it features predominantly. So if you have an interest in, you know, older consoles, if you have an interest particularly in Nintendo, particularly in Animal Farm, I think we spent quite some time discussing that as well, then drop by. Look, if you don't have any interest in that, then don't drop by. That's fine. That's your choice. You know, take a week off or whatever. But if you do, I'll see you next week. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. Push to Plat Podcast are conceived, written, and edited by CJ Anderson in Adobe Audition. YouTube upload handled by repurpose.io. Music licensing by artist.io. Push to Plat would like to thank our Patreon producers, Zador VP, Redbeard Rick, T-Bird, Olcero, and Ready to E-Beg. Without your support, this show would cease to exist. If you would like to say hi, jump into the Discord in the show notes or on Twitter at Push to Plat. If you're interested in supporting the show, then jump on Patreon, the Push to Plat Patreon, where you can find more information on how to support us and allow us to continue to bring wonderful guests and topics from around the world.